Hi, this is Lori, your host of Happiness Hangout, a space to come and elevate your happiness levels. You, me, and our guests will discuss and help you apply happiness to all aspects of your life, even if you're already happy. Get your daily boost of information to help you feel your best. Hi, listeners. This is Lori Peters, and welcome again to the Happiness Hangout, your place and space for all things happy. Very excited, as always, to be talking about a very interesting topic, and we're selecting these topics specifically for the holiday season, which not all of our listeners, but many of our listeners are celebrating a holiday coming, If you live in the U.S., Eastern Europe, wherever in the world, if you're Christian, you're celebrating Christmas, or you might be celebrating Hanukkah around this time. So we really wanted to talk about some of the things that happen to us as human beings and try to keep in mind how to feel our best when we're going through a lot of major chaos that we typically do during holiday times. So today I brought on the show Kathleen McCarthy, who is known as Kat. Her friends call her Kat. And she's been a champion of contentment for many, many years. Because today we're going to talk about how to be happy with what you've got, how to feel content and at peace with what you have, especially during this time when we've got, you know, so much going on in terms of gift buying as well. So Kat, at first, you know, she wrestled through discovering her own contentment, and then she created a magazine that offered folks a chance to learn what she and others have learned about becoming more content with your life. Today, she's married to the love of her life, does the work of her dreams, and lives in a home that is exciting to wake up to. Kat believes that happiness is a byproduct of the choices we make and adopting the perspective of contentment. Hi, Kat. Welcome to the Happiness Hangout.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Really glad that you're here today. And I couldn't help but think, you know, about this holiday season. And, you know, really a lot of people, if you do follow Christian or Jewish traditions, we are in the midst of it right now. And I can tell you, I've made a conscious effort to streamline what I do and make it more pleasant and happy for myself. And this is the time where marketing goes full throttle on every form of media out there you can dream of. Buy, 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 more, more, more. Everybody wants to have their rugs cleaned, their houses done, spruced up for guests, along with all the gifts and all the food in it. I could go on and on and on. So talking about being content, I think, is really important right now, not just for what's going on in the chaos of different traditions of holidays, but, you know, afterwards, what happens when that chaos is over and we go back to that kind of, humdrum, blah feeling that many people get, you know, after the holidays. We'll even talk about that a little bit. So I'm just going to start out with a bigger picture question, Kat, if I may. Unless, did you want to add anything before I started?
No, you're on the nose.
Wonderful. Okay. So I guess I'm going to start with a general big picture question asking, why do you think people are discontent in their lives? Where does that come from?
Okay. I see it from three different perspectives, actually. First, there's the one about us being animals who have, I don't mean to say that in a mean way, but we've evolved here. And until, you know, our modern world, it was very much about survival. And being content would not have helped us survive and evolve to where we are. Way back then, when we were eating from the land, you had to always want more, because otherwise, you know, you wouldn't survive. And then there's the piece that happened during the Depression. One of the things that happened after that during that, was that people didn't talk about the things they liked about their lives. They were worried about making other people jealous or making other people feel bad. So they stopped talking about anything that they were happy about. So that created a mindset of complaining. Have you not noticed how the older people do a lot of that? They complain about everything. And it's not their fault. It's that's the culture they grew up in. My parents, for example, they either complain about their health or how little money they have. And it was just a way of fitting in society at that time. When the Depression ended, the habit of talking that way didn't stop. And then you can throw in after that about the 1950s, the marketing animals showed up. There was always a little bit of that, but it got very intense in the 50s. I'll give you an example, the diamond market. Diamonds are not traditionally a long-term thing that we did, for example, engagement. Occasionally in Europe, before the 1950s, someone in a royal family would give a gem to the person they wanted to marry, but it was never a diamond. It was always like an emerald or a ruby or sapphire or something like that. I don't remember the name of the company, but a company approached approached a marketing company in New York City in the 1954, I think it was, and asked them to create a campaign that would make diamonds valuable. They have tons of them, They had no idea what to use them for, except for using them on phonographs and, record players later, turntables. They never really had a use for them. They're basically just pretty rocks. So this De Boers company, maybe I'm getting that mixed up. Maybe De Boers is they're the people that had the diamond. They went to this marketing company, and this marketing company dreamed up the idea that we should give diamonds for engagement. And look where it is today.
Wow, yeah. So
almost every person in North America, at least, gets a diamond when they get engaged, right?
That's funny. I just got engaged like 3 weeks ago. So that's fun. You know, it's really hitting home about how we went through that process. And quite frankly, go big or go home is a lot of sort of the mindset of people. And other people were telling me about tiny little diamonds that they used to get. And now, they've just gotten bigger and bigger, even for very young couples, to figure out a way to get that diamond as big as possible. So what they did absolutely worked on us.
Absolutely. Another big marketing scam done at the same time, well, maybe a little bit earlier in time, was the washing machine. Before the invention of the washing machine, the commercial ones that, you had to buy at Sears or whatever, people didn't wear a clean shirt every day. That same marketing company did a big campaign about how you should be wearing a clean shirt every day and what's it like now. We even shower every day, even though we don't really need to. In fact, it's bad for some people's skin to do that.
That's true. Right. It depends on your skin and all of that, right?
Yeah. So, marketing has played a huge role as well. Huge role. And, and then there's peer pressure, of course. My son, for example, doesn't drive. And, he's 36 years old. And even I'm guilty of it. Why don't you get your license? Don't you want to have a nice car? And partly that's because I'm tired of driving him around, but it's true.
I bet.
Even people around us put pressure on us to get, be, and have more. I was involved in network marketing for a long time before I started my magazine, and that was actually what caused me to create the magazine. I was getting tired of being told I had to get, be, and have more, do more.
And it's funny, for as I think as good of a happy place that I can be, and I really, do a lot of talking and presenting around, being happy wherever you are, state of mind wise, no matter what's going on. In other words, when a horrific tragedy happens, obviously your happy scale between 1 and 10 is at like almost 0. But if you can get it to a 2 just to get through it, not everybody's at a 10 all the time. That would be crazy and very odd. So, but I talk about that area of yes, I'm in this happy place, but yet I'll be completely open. I'm looking around my kitchen, because I do a lot of my work from home and I'm a college instructor and we just went on break. So, I'm looking around my kitchen. I've wanted to redo it for a really long time. And, part of me struggles with, okay, yeah, I could do it. but I really want to be putting the money towards other things right now. So I half wonder, is it society telling me you have to upgrade, or am I truly wanting to just get a new perspective and look at things differently? Now, I know I could do it cheaply. You know, I could paint instead of getting granite counters. I could do a lot cheaply, but I do feel that urge. Like, it's been 15 years and I really want a new look. So Kat, how do we deal with those things that come up in our lives where we want to change? And sometimes people do it and they don't have the money, or they just keep changing for the sake of changing. How do we deal with that urge to make that change, or should we make it sometimes?
Well, of course we should sometimes. I mean, I believe we're here to experience joy. And if you're going to get genuine joy from doing that thing, then that's awesome. But if that's not the case, if you're not going to have joy from the experience, then you're probably just throwing money at trying to find a way to be happy, because, you know, it will make you happy for a little while, but for how long?
Well, that's what we say about happiness. It's only very temporary because it comes from within inside you and it's a mindset. So anytime you're looking to the external world, obviously that's a problem. So do I hear you saying, in essence, you do that when you have the money, when it's the right time, when it's something that you know you'll really enjoy, it's okay, in other words?
Yes, that would be the short version. What I do personally is I use two tools. First off, I really look inside and see if it's me wanting it or someone else making me feel like I should have it, or that they'll, or me feeling like someone will think of me better if I have that. Because the outside world is really, really influential. And then the second tool I use is I really look at the benefits and the consequences, and I weigh them, you know, which feels better. To, for example, say I don't really have enough money. So, you know, I'm weighing the consequences are maybe I'll be on the broke side for a few months if I do this. So which feels better, having the kitchen or not having the kitchen, having my money or not having my money? And I find that really useful because you can really look at things you might miss because you're not considering both sides of the equation.
If that makes sense. Definitely. Because how many people will say, oh, I'm fine with it, I don't need to have the money. And then they do it. And then they know that they're going to have to either credit card it again or they're not going to have money to pay their bills. That's when I think we have to go inside ourselves. Because I struggled with that many years ago, trying to use external things to make me feel better. I mean, this has been a very long process in getting me to where I am today. And I still love those nice things, but at the same time, there are people out there who have no idea to even look inside. They don't even know what's going on with them.
That's true.
They just look for temporary happiness all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, they're basically unhappy with their life in general, or they wouldn't be doing that.
So I like those.
And there's ways to tell that.
No, I said I really like those, the way that you process that by really looking at, and I'm kind of repeating it just so I have it in my head, looking at, is someone else encouraging me or trying to make me do this, or do I want it? I love that. And then really looking at the pros and cons to doing it. And then you were going to go on and say what else?
Just that, you know, you can kind of figure out if you're a happy-oriented or content-oriented person just by looking at the things you do every day and how you feel about them. Like, for example, someone who drinks a lot every day is not happy. So probably most of the things that they're reaching for outside themselves isn't going to do much for them. They'll just get a momentary burst of, yay, I got it, and then, you know. I mean, how many times have we bought kids presents for Christmas and they play with them for 5 minutes and never look at it again? But they really wanted it before they had it.
Right.
You know, other things that you can look at is, you know, are you generally happy with your work, or are you depressed at work, or do you dread going in the morning? Those sorts of things will give you really good sense really quickly of where you are in general with your contentment and I believe happiness comes from contentment, so that's why I use that word. You can't really be happy and be discontent. It doesn't really work.
Right. But you mentioned about work. I mean, really, you can look at those major facets of your life, whatever you're going to call, you know, mind, body, spirit, physical, mental, spiritual, whatever, however you want to look at that. Really, wouldn't we say that we want to look at maybe all aspects there?
Absolutely. And I once had a teacher, actually, he taught transactional analysis. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's the popular books from that course, or they call it a group psychology stuff, but I'm okay and you're okay, or cry anger. Have
yes.
you heard of any of that? Okay.
Yeah. I learned about it in ethics class way back in undergrad, so I'm a little fuzzy,
okay.
But
I took these courses for 7 years. I started when I was 17. Anyway, he used to say part of that whole philosophy is that if you're happy, there's three parts to your life. There's your work life, your family life, and your spiritual life. If you're happy in two of those areas, then you're okay. You're not exploding with happiness, but you're not probably going to be in depression. So, you know, you need to evaluate your life however you want to evaluate it and break it down as many ways you want to, but then take note of which ones are okay. And I bring that up because you can change the other one. I mean, if you're not happy in your work, you don't have to stay in your work. Or if you're not happy in your relationship, you don't have to stay in your relationship. A lot of folks don't move on when they're unhappy with something because they're afraid of the consequences. And the truth is the consequences are much bigger, I promise, much bigger if you don't do something about it.
Well, isn't that the truth? I mean, I think you and I may have done the same thing in terms of work. I mean, I may have mentioned this to our listeners before, but, you know, I had quite frankly, a really good career in what I was doing I've been in the field for 22 or 23 years, and some things had shifted, changed. I took a deep breath and said, really, I mean, I really, the way I felt was hate. I hate this. That's how it felt. And that's no good. And I took a deep breath, all the great pay cuts that came along with it. And I have never had a better life. You know, did I have to sort of restructure how I was going to do things? Of course, you know, how was I going to make money? How was I going to do this, do that? Yes, of course. But the way I feel from doing that, and again, I had to be in somewhat of a position to be able to do it. You know, I had to have some money coming in. But it is like my whole world has changed. And my fiance, right, today, he said, when I met you, you were great. Now you're like exploding with, you know, like, wow. You know, the difference that it made. And so I know a lot of people struggle with that. You can say that for relationships. It seems easy, but it's really hard because you're dealing with feelings. Work, the fear might be money or perception. Spirituality is so ingrained. I think it's such a personal thing that's something each person has to, you know, work with and deal with. But I don't know if you've been through those. I think you have in the work, when we talked before in the workplace, you know, doing that thing that you love.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm one of those people, I never liked jobs. I've never had a job for more than 2 years, ever, and I'm 52 years old, so I always try to do my own thing because, I mean, it's like hating broccoli and someone trying to make you eat it.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Yeah.
But I've had cleaner examples in my relationships. 9 years ago, my father died. And he was only 24 years older than I was. And I was okay with his death, and I was okay with him. I didn't have any serious problems with any of that. But it got me thinking, you know, he's 24 years older than me. If I only have 24 years left, am I doing what I want to do? And I went through the list of all the different parts of my life, and most of them got crossed off as no. And one of them was my relationship. Now, when I got honest with myself about that, I was able to go to my partner, who had been a long-term relationship, and tell him the truth about that. And he's still one of my best friends because I was able to be honest with myself. So I was able to be honest with him. So there was no real hurt feeling. And that's the part that I think folks miss, is the fear that they're feeling before they make that change, whatever it is, isn't real. It's stuff you've made up. You don't know what's going to happen until you do it. And if you do it from a place of complete honesty with yourself and whoever else is involved, it's not going to be like you've made it up to be. There's just too much opportunity for something new when you do it that way.
Right. And when residual feelings are still there, you know, that can be tough. But yeah, if you really can think through that and say no and really come to terms with, I really have to leave. But you got to get to that point. You know, I had a friend, and I would include myself in this list of people who I know have done this, who maybe even knew it wasn't right, but sort of had to like go through it until you really felt done with it, whatever that was. Like, I know I should not be here, but you just put it aside. You're just not ready. And then that day finally comes with a person, a job, a situation, whatever. And sometimes you just can't push it until you're really ready to do it. And, you know, I've been through that. And I know people that I've talked with that have been through that. And, you know, so you just sometimes have to get to the point where it's time now.
Well, yeah, happiness has to become, your contentment has, and your pleasure in your life has to become the priority. And sometimes that takes a while. That's absolutely true.
Which sounds odd when we say that. Why would happiness not be number one at any time? But because all the have-tos, the musts, the guilt, the fear, everything sits there, and you have to, I guess you just have to work through that, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it takes time. In our society, we are expected to give and give, especially women, until there's no one else left to give with, and then it's okay to be good to ourselves. And it takes a long time to get to the point where you don't care anymore about that. You need to move on and do what's good for you. But it's kind of a sad thing, but I hope it's changing now. I hope it's starting to change. There's a lot of other things that are changing too, so I'm hoping that's one of them, where we can start honoring our own selves.
I hope so, too. And I think it has. I mean, I just did a show on empowering women, and I had a guest. Her name is Lisa Marie Jenkins, and we talked about that. And I think a lot of women come into that still, even with our generation, Kat. I think people come into that later in life. I don't know about younger generations, you know, because, you know, generations are getting married, two generations younger than me are getting married, and even before that. So, you know, I don't know if they understand that. I hope that a lot of the, you know, personal development is incorporated into what we're learning, either from our teaching or from life, that it comes sooner. Because, you know, you don't have to wait till your kids are grown. You don't have to wait, you know, till you feel like, well, I've given my time, like you said, now I can do it. You have to incorporate that along the way, or you're just not going to be as good of a mother, worker, or sister, whatever you are, if you can't do that. You know what I think for us women? We talked a lot about saying no. It was so wrong to say no. And I even think men struggle with that. But man, I'm learning to do it. I don't know about you.
Yeah, absolutely. But I actually think that it's coming. I'm not so sure it's tied to personal development so much as social evolution. When the birth control pill was invented and thrown into our society, it, for the first time in history, women had choices that they never had before. And it's been a process. I mean, that was 1962, I believe. It's been a process for women to learn what to do with that. What do you do with choices when you've never made them, when I mean, I believe that we have a certain amount of genetic memory. So we have all this genetic memory attached to, I mean, we're stuck. We have sex, we have babies, now we have to take care of them. We're kind of stuck to the cave, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now it's been 50, 60 years that we've had these choices, and I think we're evolving, our society in general is evolving to account for that. And it takes time. It does take time. I mean, saying no, yeah, that's a tough one even for some men. Yes, that's true. And maybe that's not related.
I think we have to just be okay with maybe even when we say no, somebody tells somebody, I can't believe she said no or he said no. We have to be okay with the fact that they may say something about us. They may think something about us. And that's hard too, because I'm a people pleaser and I'm getting away from that as much as possible. But I really, really, I enjoy people pleasing. You know, but I had to find that balance, because that's really dangerous.
Absolutely. And I have a tool for that. This is what I did. For a couple of years, I mean, I had to really work at staying focused on this, but for a couple of years, every time someone gave me a compliment, I would think to myself, that's not personal. It's not about me. And what started happening was, over a period of time, is I'd stop taking the negative things they had to say about me personal.
Right.
It actually works.
Oh, yeah, because it's usually about the person that's saying it.
Exactly. But, I mean, and we all know that, but it's really hard to put that into practice because, you know, we crave those compliments and, you know, the positive feedback. So this is one way to get past it.
So you're saying even when they complimented you, didn't say anything negative, or something positive, you even said, I know this isn't about me, it's about them?
I did that instead for a long time. Because
so no matter what you got, positive or negative feedback, you didn't take it you didn't take it too personally?
No. The negative stuff was way too emotionally charged, so I focused on the positive stuff.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you did take the positive stuff to heart, but the negative stuff, you realized it's not personal.
Nope, opposite.
Really?
I was still reacting to the negative stuff, and I didn't know how to stop that. And
yeah.
I realized that I probably couldn't. So I went from the other route. I stopped taking the compliments personally.
Wow.
And what that did was, over time, it made me realize that none of it's personal.
Yeah, because we're coming up from a place of our own perception.
Exactly.
And so it is nice to hear nice things.
Yes.
It feels good, but you're right. If you can just take it all in the same way, then, you know, nothing hurts you as much. I've never thought of anything like that.
Cool.
It's different. That's very different.
I'm a tool seeker because, you know, there's so many things that we all know. We've been told 100 times. You know, don't take anything personally. There's a whole bunch of them. But the tools are always kind of lame, right? So I went looking for new ways of doing things, and that was one of the things I chose and worked for me.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other tools you could recommend for those that feel that constant urge to always look externally? And I know you've got to go inside yourself. And work on whatever's going on. That's where you have to start. But are there any other interesting tools that you've come across? Because that's really interesting. That one you said was very cool.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of them are actually pretty mainstream. But, you know, there are different things I've done. One of the most effective things that I have done is, for 2.5 years, every day, I wrote 5 things I appreciated about me. I included things like how I looked that day, if I felt I looked okay, or what I did for someone else, or what I accomplished, or what I created, absolutely anything, and I tried to be original every day. And it got down to minute details by the time I was done. You know, I brushed my teeth for 2 minutes instead of one minute and 45 seconds. It got down to details. And what that does is it starts to make you realize that you are made up of the moments in your day, and It's not just what we do, but what we do matters. We're here in this physical plane, and it's crazy to think that what we do doesn't matter. So you begin to get an appreciation of what you spend your time on, and then you start to change how you spend your time. And how you spend your time adds value to yourself, for yourself. If that makes sense, does it?
Well, yeah, because the way you are spending your time is making up who you are and those choices. I mean, a lot of people, and I always joke about this, I love saying it. I had a boss once who said, you don't just not stop and smell the roses, you run right past the roses. I mean, and that stuck with me. I think that was one of the very beginning moments, of course, sort of the, I feel like I've had a transformation over the last, especially 10 years. And I was always on to the next thing. I mean, I truly was the epitome of personal growth needing to happen. I mean, I really was. So I get that. I mean, wherever you're spending your time and what you're doing, all we have are the moments in our day. But yet what we do a lot of times is think about the future. That's what we spend a lot of time doing. There was a great saying out there, if you're in the past, if you're thinking about the future, that's because of fear. If you're looking at the past, it's because of dwelling, you know, dwelling more in, and I forgot the word they use, but it's more like, there's a great word for it, but future is fear. Past is, can't come up with the word, but it would be in essence, like not liking what's happening to you right now. So when you stay in the present, and that's what how I take it, when you're having those moments of your day and you're appreciating all of them, there you are.
Yeah. Well, and here's another way to look at it. If you're focused on the past, you're depressed. If you're focused on the future, you're stressed out.
There it is. Thank you. It's depressed. And then future is, I've also heard fear. Fear and depression come from the same place anyway.
No, that's not necessarily true. I know a lot of visionaries who are very focused on the future. Sometimes I'm one of them. But it depends on what you're focused on in the future. Are you focused on worrying about things or creating things? There's a big difference between the two. I mean, you could not have created the Happiness Hangout without spending time in the future figuring out what you wanted.
True. Absolutely.
Right?
That's kind of like the whole visioning thing, right? Like how a lot of people really believe, they swear by vision boards, and they swear by, you know, and I'm a big follower of the law of attraction. I think you and I maybe have talked about this on the phone before, that I absolutely do that, you know, you bring to you what you put out there. So the future does come into manifestation, and vision boards, I have one hanging up on my, you know, right in my home here. So I totally get what you're saying there.
Yeah, it's not all fear-based. It depends on how you feel about your past, actually, how you see your future.
Oh, boy, that is a big one.
Well, you know, our past is our past. It's what made us who we are now. Our future is not yet written, and it will decide it's where we want to go, and the present is how we get there. The present is building who we are now.
And what are your thoughts about, you know, a lot of people's past, they may not look back upon so fondly. And so here you are now. So what do you do with that?
I'll tell you a really brief story. I was the kid that you would not want your kids to hang out with. I was the teenager that you would be afraid if your kids were hanging out with. I spent much of my early life dealing drugs, basically being very promiscuous, and stealing. I was just lying. I was just one of those people, those kids. And then when I was 17, I started in personal development. My mother, there was a fire at my mother's house, and I was sleeping outside in a camper beside where the fire was. And I just sat there and had a cigarette and watched the fire. The next day, I realized that I could have died. And so my mom sent me to take this transactional analysis thing. It took many years it took about a year after that before I realized that I was a bitch and a loser. And then many years before I actually changed. Then what happened was when I met my present husband, it was a long distance relationship. I met him at a yoga conference in Norway, and we spent many months apart. All we had was to talk or write emails or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we did what we called our dark walk. We spent several weeks telling each other the worst stories we had about ourselves. And what happened through that process, because we didn't judge each other, is that we started to accept who the other person, we started to accept who we were, because we were telling our stories that we've never told, and not being judged for it. And what happened was that I really began to accept that I am who I am because of those things. Now I can see that, okay, I was a drug dealer, but that was my first introduction into real business. I learned a lot of things through that. And, yeah, I was promiscuous when I was 16, but I really have a good sense of people, and I'm really good at working with people now. And I think it started there. I got an understanding of folks. When I need to coach someone who's come from that place, I have real compassion for them because I know how it feels. And that's how you do it. You tell your stories and you realize that they're not so terrible and almost everyone has them. And then you start to accept who you are, who you are is because of the things that you've done, both good and bad, both of them.
Nothing. Do you think everybody has to reconcile their past if they've had a past they don't look favorably upon? Do they have to reconcile it before they can help themselves be happy and content? Or could they just start from where they are right now?
They can start from where they are right now, because every single little thing that you forgive yourself for, or forgive is the wrong word. I have a little bit of a problem with forgive. I think it marks us as being broken. If you have to forgive yourself, then you must be broken. I rather go with the idea that accept. Every little thing you accept yourself for will change your day. And if you can't accept it yet, then maybe you need to just put it on the back burner and wait until you can get to a place where you can accept it. For example, there was this one little incident. I was moving one time. My mother had bought me all these brand new towels just before I moved. And when I moved, I left them there. It took me 3 years, I think, to finally put that to rest. I felt so bad about it for so long.
Yeah.
And it's the little things sometimes that get you. It's not always the big thing.
Yeah, I understand that, and it's interesting because I just can't help thinking I teach this class, and in the class we deal with theories of counseling. And some theorists, especially Freud, you have to delve deep into your past to resolve your current issues. And several theorists that we learn about, you absolutely start right from where you are. So this always is interesting to me. I had a wonderful parents, but I had all kinds of stuff going on within me. You know, it's one of those stories where I don't have a thing to blame my parents for. But I'm very self-conscious and very self-critical. And really couldn't get out of my own way for a very, very long time. really a long time. Really, every day I'm pretty much out of it my own way. But I had to reconcile some things, but pretty much started from where I was and then went from there, because I came to the realization that human beings aren't put here to be perfect. We know we're not perfect, and it appears we're not supposed to be. So if that's the case, knowing that alone is sort of enough to make us think, well, then what's the big deal, almost, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. And there's two things I want to add to that. First off, nature demands a balance. Nothing good can happen without something bad happening, and nothing bad can happen without something good happening. And how you can interpret that one way, the way I do, is that no matter what I did in my life, there was both good aspects and bad aspects about it. So that's an important piece. And then I had a teacher for a long time named Tilak. He was from Sri Lanka. And he taught us that we are all perfectly imperfect. If we were all perfect, we'd be in a very boring world with no creation, because it's our imperfections that allow us to create. If you look in the universe, it's not until there's an explosion that new planets are created, for example. And
right.
That's about our lives, and especially our emotional lives.
I mean, we couldn't start off knowing everything and what to do and doing it right, and we don't end that way either, because there's all these other things coming into our decision-making. I mean, everything else except us is out of our control, really. I mean, we don't control everybody's thoughts, feelings, actions. We don't control, you know, when something breaks. I mean, it just is, it's just there. I've learned it's how I deal with it. And that sounds so simple, but it is so powerful. You know, there was a time I would get so stressed out when anything would happen. And it's funny, I catch myself constantly going, wait a minute, is this a big deal at all? And I'm like, no, I just go do this over here, or I just go make this phone call, or I just go tell this person this. Why? I can't believe, but I was born a stress ball. I was born, it's hereditary. My grandmother, full of stress. That's Skip, my mother. She's as cool as a cucumber, but I'm just like my maternal grandmother. And so I worked on that, and it feels so darn good, you know, because it's just not worth it to feel that way. So whatever it is you have to deal with or work on, so to speak, to get there, I mean, do it. You're not supposed to be perfect. That doesn't mean we have a license to go out and do horrible things to people. What that says is if you're basically good, and I think most human beings come from a place of good at their core, I believe that. That's my personal opinion. Then all you can do is go from there. What else can you do?
I'm actually part Native. My grandmother was Native. And I had the privilege of spending quite a bit of time with her. And that's why I'm so attached to the idea of nature and the balance, and the fact that both sides of the equation usually happen. So one practice that I started, I think I was in my mid-20s, actually, was whenever something went wrong, I started saying, find the nugget in my head. And what that means is that something went wrong. So there's a gift in here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be, because nature demands a balance. So find the nugget. Where's the nugget? What's the piece that I'm not seeing? That's a tool that I use to change my perspective of a situation.
And I focus on that when I find it. You know,
yeah, exactly.
I'm not trying to, you know, I don't think we're trying to say that you don't grieve when someone dies, or if something bad happens to you, that you don't, you know, that don't you let yourself feel anything. I'm not a proponent of that. I'm saying, okay, you know, you're going to be shocked. Take some deep breaths, go through what you have to go through. But I personally like to find that nugget as quickly as I can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We had a suicide in the family in April, and it's been a pretty trying 6 months for everyone. And I'm not so sure I've found the nugget yet, but I definitely come to a place of peace with it. My husband's still struggling, but I think he's getting there. But maybe the nugget is that he reminded us that we're not really separate. We just think we are. And we can, if we choose, to be happy, even though he's not here. I think that's the nugget, but I'm not really sure yet.
You go through the process. I mean, when my dad passed away, I said the same thing in terms of, you know, he was not very happy. He just wasn't. Never saw him that snarly. That's the word I use. Towards the end of his life, I'm sure he wasn't feeling well. But he had so much to be grateful for, and he wouldn't, or he couldn't, or both. I don't know. But my mom had died several years before, and they were still married, but they had been married 34 years. And my dad was married to someone after, you know, my mom passed. And I said to her, I know this kills you, but he gets to make the decision about his life. Like, that's the only way I could get through it. He gets to make his own decisions. He wouldn't take medication. I said I did everything I could. I had the discussions. I talked to the doctors. It's ultimately his decision to do what he wants to do, because it is his life. That was the only way for me to be able to to sit, and I'll bring this back to contentment, to sit and say, okay, that's the truth as I see it, and I'm going to have to be okay with it.
Yeah. That's the only place you can go in the end, because they're gone. What do you do?
Right.
But there is a gift. There is a gift in death. Believe it or not, there is a gift.
I agree.
Especially people that you're actually blood related to. Remember I mentioned earlier about having a genetic memory?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. The people we are born to, we have a genetic connection to them. And people who are born from us have a genetic connection to us. So when our parents die and we become genetic orphans, it's actually an opportunity to finally, for the first time in our lives, be who we are, minus their vision of us. And there's the gift when you lose a parent. It's a little more difficult when you lose a child.
Ugh.
But it's a physical reaction. It's not all emotional. Some of it's physical, because that the genetic connection, that genetic memory, is severed.
That's really interesting that you say that, because I've always, even as a little kid, I was trying to explain this to a few people, and I don't know how to put it in words, but even as a little kid, Mom and I were extremely close. She died at 58, which is very young, and I was 30. My mom was 24 when she had me too, like your dad. But, and I said, I knew I was not going to be my full self till she was gone. I knew it. And I don't know how I knew it as a little kid. I don't know that I could verbalize it, but I knew it. And it was absolutely true. And that's not a diss to my mom. It's just that I had to go other places that she might have not understood.
Exactly. And they have their vision of us, and it does have some effect. In part because we want to please them.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, yeah.
The outside thing again. But then also there's the little piece where it's actually physical genetic memory. I'm trying to stay away from the woo-woo stuff, but it is said that we have 12 strands of DNA, and they can only see two of them or four of them. How many is that? I don't remember. The other 12 are ethereal.
The other 12 are what?
They're more of a spiritual connection.
Okay. I didn't hear you. Okay.
Or the other 8 or 10 or whatever. I don't remember the numbers, because I've been working a lot more in the real world for the last 10 years. But I do remember reading this stuff. And that's when I started thinking about, you know, what are those other strands of DNA that we can't see? And I believe that at least one pair has to be, you know, our family connection.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be.
Well, it makes sense.
Exactly. At least one pair. I don't have the science behind it, because I stopped paying attention to that stuff. But it had an impact on the way I looked at things. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I was very close to my grandmother, and she died when I was 9 years old. And I know that had a huge physical impact on me. Everything changed after that.
Yeah, so there, that connection's sort of unexplainable, but it's there, and you know it is something, so you just go with it. I think, I mean, I know, especially you have to be open to it sometimes. Like, I didn't get all that till I got older, and I have these connections to people and things that happen and interesting things, and I know there's something to it, and I just go with it, you know? What else? That's what you should do,
absolutely.
I think.
Well, you know, you have to a point, because it's part of who you are. And, you know, it's said that until you accept who you are, you can't really discover freedom or happiness or joy. And part of who we are is connected to other people.
Absolutely.
I love the idea that we have to go inside to be happy and content, but we also have to remember that we're connected to other people, and we cannot get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a piece, and it's important.
Yes, totally agree.
How do you be content if you have people in your life that are driving you nuts? Figure out why they're driving you nuts.
Yeah.
So you.
Oh boy, we could go into a whole thing about that.
Yeah, I'd be happy
Oh
to chat in the
boy.
future sometime if you like.
Well, you know, we are coming close to the end here, and I really want, as we wrap up, I really want you to talk about the Magic Happens magazine and about your magic, the Life by Magic conference and your meditation. I'm going to give everybody the information at the end, but tell us all about the work you're doing.
Okay, the magazine actually has 65 writers these days, and what our magazine is about is thriving. It's about contentment is also equal to thriving. You thrive when you're content. You get happy when you're thriving. Thriving is about not surviving. It's about doing what you love, feeling everything from your heart, and creating from your heart. And so I have all these writers. Some of them are healers. Some of them are just ordinary people, actually, just telling their story. And they're all examples of how to either get to a place of thriving or what it looks like to be thriving. So the magazine is my passion. I've been running it for 8 years, and it means more to me than anything else that I do. It is the work that I love. Now, the conference, Life by Magic Conference, the magazine, you can find it at www.themagichappens.com. All ordinary words, themagichappens.com. The Life by Magic Conference is basically a conference where people who write for the magazine get on a video and talk. We have interviews, and we talk about the things they're writing about so that folks can get to know them and learn to trust them a little bit better. And you can find that at lifebymagic.com, ordinary magic. And the peace meditation is actually the thing I'm most excited about right now. On January 1st, for the whole day, starting in midnight on Australia time, January 1st, we're holding a 24-hour, well, it's actually probably 30 hours, meditation. We're inviting everyone to come at whatever 1 or 2 hours they have available to be in a guided meditation with either. There's two meditations. They will run alternately. One is done by a very famous Baba from India who lives in Calcutta, and what he does is he speaks all over the world and on mindful living, and he offers holistic medicine to 200,000 people every year, and he runs street schools for the kids. He's an amazing man, and I love him to death, and he did one of the meditations, and my husband did the other one. He's been teaching meditation for 20 years, maybe longer, not really sure, and they're both going to be talking about peace and taking us into a place of peace, and our hope is that we get as many people as possible to this peace meditation, because it studies have shown that just 1% of people who are praying or meditating in an area can reduce violence, rapes, car accidents, everything that's involved in violence, robberies, all of those things. And we really need that in this time in our planet. There's a lot of violence going on in a lot of places. It's
Yes.
not an easy thing to find. You'd have to go to the magazine, www.themagichappens.com, and look in the right-hand column. There's the editor's corner, and I put up a post there. It's called A Dream of Peace for 2016. That would be the easiest way to find it. I didn't really think about making it easy.
So you can go to the magazine, and it's www.themagichappens. There's an S on the end of happens, themagichappens.com, and it's on the home page on the right.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's
yeah, because I've read the magazine, Kat, and it's unbelievable. I love it because it really deals around all these topics of, I speak specifically around happiness and well-being, but, embracing, who you are and I know there's different themes all the time of what people are writing about, and there's kind of a theme every month, isn't there?
Yes. Like, for example, the theme for January will be possibility.
Mm-hmm.
The theme for December was enchantment.
Enchantment. I knew it was an E. Okay. Yeah, enchantment.
Yeah. that's just a way to give the writers a little bit of a helping hand and to have some kind of cohesion with the magazine. It's been running 8 years, and
yeah.
you need to find a way to kind of make it a little bit more focused than it was in the beginning. But I'm still hoping that you'll come write for us at some point.
Oh, it'd be wonderful. My gosh. Oh, love it. Love it. Well, wonderful. It's been so good to have you. And everybody, remember to go to themagichappens.com. Check out the magazine. Check out the conferences are at lifebymagic.com. But again, if you just go to themagichappens.com, you're going to, you know, find the gist of what you're looking for there. And Kat McCarthy, thank you so much. We've run out of time. I always think I'm not going to have enough, and I always have too much. And it was just wonderful having you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been way fun.
It has. And I really look forward to the peace meditation and hope I can get on, and I'm putting it on my calendar.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Want to find a space to participate in reading, activities, interactive blog, and much more? Check out www.happinesshangout.net. Looking for a speaker or workshop around the area of happiness? We customize presentations to fit your needs. Just click on the My Services tab at the website. You can also support the site by shopping at Amazon or one of our other affiliates. Just go to www.happinesshangout.net and click on the shopping link or go to my page here at BBS Radio.